Hi, this is Danielle from the Gels Curator, and this is episode 56 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Speaking of artists from around the world, today I'm talking to India-born, Australia-based artist Gunjan Ahluwadi. I sure hope I said that right. I think I did. Now, I am sitting here trying to think of a way to explain what she does, but in all honesty, I really have no idea how she does what she does. Let's just say that there is a lot of paper woven to look like intricate patterned tapestries. Yes, she makes paper do that. I am so excited to learn a little bit more about her. All I know so far is that she is insanely talented, completely self-taught, and a little bit nervous. So, let's get on with this. Calling Sydney. Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. Have you just woken up?
Are
you?
No. I got up at 7 this morning because I knew that we were going to have this call and I wanted to be ready for it. I think I've already had like 2 cups of coffee. It's still not helping.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, it's 4 o'clock the day before here, and I think I've had 3 or 4 cups of coffee today, so we might be close to tied.
No, you couldn't have been nervous about talking to me, right?
I'm always nervous with every podcast. I always get anxious about dialing.
I know. It's funny. Like, I think 5 minutes into this call, both of us will be fine, but yeah. The first 5 minutes will be awkward.
Oh, it's always that buildup of, you know, that always makes people nervous, and me too. So, yeah, I totally get it. And coffee generally helps.
Yeah, in the morning, coffee is my only option. I can't reach out for other things.
I know, me too.
I feel like I'm listening to the podcast with coffee right now. Like, this is what I do in my mornings. And it's awkward that I'm having to talk as well.
You can't just sit silently and weave paper. You actually have to talk.
Yeah.
I know, I've had a few people say that listen to it and then are on it. They're like, This is so weird. Are you going to listen to your episode?
I don't think so.
Really?
I'm totally going to skip that part. Well, and you know what? I made the mistake of going through your website just before our call, and I saw once again all the amazing people that have been on the podcast, and I'm still wondering, what am I doing here? So I'm just trying to give you an option. Do you really want to do this?
Oh my God.
We can just chat, right? And then we can make this not a podcast, just a chat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's do that. I won't hit record.
Yeah, I trust you very much on that. Like, I've heard so many people's podcasts where you've told them you won't hit record and then all of it is on there. So yeah, I trust you very much.
I know, I'm a big fat liar. I know. Well, if they're not drinking a full bottle of wine while they're doing this, then I have to lie. If they're drunk, then it works, and then they'll just let me ask whatever I want. But otherwise, I just have to trick them. So, I'm not going to hit record. No problem at all.
Right.
What was I just going to – that made me think of something. Oh, yeah. So, first of all, thank you so much for that insane piece you sent.
Thank you so much for everything you do. Like, I can't thank you for everything you've done for me so far. Like – you don't even know all that you've done. So it's just a little thank you.
A little beautiful, perfect thank you. I couldn't believe when you asked for my address, I thought, oh, cool. I thought maybe you were going to send postcards from a show or something like that. And then this giant box came to the door and I was like, and I saw your name and I was like, oh my God. And I opened it so fast and it's so beautiful. And I got teary eyed and I hung it 2 seconds later because you'd framed it so beautifully. And when I posted it, to say, oh my God, look what the mailman brought me. So many people emailed me and said, get her on the podcast. And it was done later that day. So you have to be on. People would be mad at me if I didn't have you on.
No. I can't believe this is happening. I really can't believe.
Well, you should, because your work is insane. And I need to know all of the stuff because you're self-taught, right?
Yes.
So how on earth do you start self-teaching yourself that? Were you just rolling up paper one day and they started weaving together? Like, how did you get to that?
So there's a bit of a backstory to this
okay,
whole
good.
thing.
Yes.
I've always been into paper. I've done a lot of work with paper, but mostly paper cutting. And I used to look at my work and I was constantly comparing it with other people's work and thinking, this still isn't good enough. Like, how long is this going to take for me to get to any of these people's level? Like, how can I ever compete? Because people have been doing this for 20 years. And I
Welcome
have no.
to the club.
And I
That's how you
have
know
like
you're officially an artist when you start thinking that.
no. Like it was just, I think that time I was concentrating on the skill itself. Like my work was never neat enough and never good enough when I was comparing to all of these people. I have like no patience at all. Like the idea that I can do this every day and learn, be good at something eventually, it's just not present for me. Like I'd rather not do something than like do it. Like I don't know. Like if I'm going to run today, I want to run the marathon on the first day, and
Right.
that's how I am. So I just sort of it came to me that I should probably do something completely new, and that'll rid me of the problem of having to compete with all of these extremely talented people. So
Wow.
and I just decided I was going to make paper sculptures because I hadn't seen that many of paper sculptures out there. Before that, I was just doing a lot of paper cutting and assemblage sort of work. And we just moved to Sydney, and Sydney has all of these really, really pretty cafes that are designed in those, decorated in those vintage, in that vintage style that was popular about a couple of years ago. And a lot of these cafes had bird cages, and I was thinking, oh my God, I could make a bird cage out of paper. And like it was just a really, really silly idea, but I got myself some wire and I was trying to wrap the wire with paper because how else am I going to get a bird cage? And then one day I got really tired and all the wrapped pieces of paper were on the table and I just went back to sleep. The next morning I came back on the table and all the papers were lined up for me to stick these onto the wire and I just thought that these look pretty on their own and I was really interested in textiles as well and I thought if I put all of them together, it'll look like a paper carpet, and let me just give that a go. The first piece was really, really bad because obviously I did not know what I was doing. But then I don't know why I kept at it because I felt like I'd struck on something new here. And because I had no one else to look up to on how nice it could look, I just kept going and
Yeah, you couldn't even Google it.
Yeah, like I tried to Google a lot of keywords like paper curling, paper weaving, paper mosaics, but I just could not find it. And then one fine day, I just woke up and I told my husband, guess what? Nobody is doing this thing. So I am going to do this. And yeah, and that's how I kept doing it. And it just got better and better. Like when I started doing this, I did not know that I could do it this neatly. I just thought I'm going to do a shabby job of this thing and it'll be fine because nobody will know.
That is so funny. But it there when you said a few minutes ago you don't have patience.
Yeah, I don't.
What? But some of your pieces are huge and intricate, like how you clearly have patience.
The same person when I'm doing this work. Like I'm really jealous of everybody who has any amount of patience and does their work really, really nicely. Like the people are so particular about their work. I went to this exhibition where this guy laid down a piece of rough paper so that he could keep his works on them so nothing would get dirty. And I was like, I don't do any of those things. I don't have patience for all of that stuff. But when I'm doing this work, I don't know what it is, but I think it's a lot of encouragement from everyone else to do this well.
Yeah.
So I
Is it
just,
sort of meditative when you're doing it?
oh, absolutely. I just feel like for the first time, I have a trick for meditation. Like people have told me to meditate so many times because they the kind of person I am. They've told me meditation will really work for you. But it obviously never has because I keep thinking about all other kinds of stuff that I shouldn't be thinking about. But when I'm doing this, I'm not thinking about any of those things. And stuff just seems to work. Like I can't explain it. It's another being inside of me when I'm doing this. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm a completely different person. Like, if you met me otherwise and you didn't know I did this, you'd be like, nah, no way, you haven't made this.
So what does your husband think and your family? Are they like, what?
It's a lot of my husband's doing where I am today, because he is an extremely, extremely patient person. Like, he saw me struggle with this thing and he was like, you have to be more patient with this and you have to do it properly. He taught me how to take shit seriously. Like, there are so many times when you're doing stuff and you're like, nah, I can't take this seriously. What's the whole point of doing this? But he's not like that. For him, you have to take your pleasure really, really seriously. So he saw me working on something one day and he saw me being my messy self. And he was like, do it properly. Like, why not? And yeah, and that's how I started doing it properly, because I finally had someone encouraging me to do this properly, take this seriously. Like, he knew it before I did, that if I did this properly, the world will be waiting for me.
Oh, I just followed him. What does he do? Is he creative or totally opposite?
I think he's really creative, but he works as a consultant. So, he's not working in any creative industry, but his input in my work is huge, huge.
That's amazing. That's like my husband, too. He's a digital media strategist, but he's so, so that helps me with the blog and podcast and stuff, but he's so encouraging of my art and any creative endeavor I have. He's just like so on board, and you're right. It really helps to have someone in your corner like that.
Yeah, no, that is so valuable, because on your own, you can, if it doesn't make sense to you, and it's so easy to get into that rut that this does not mean anything.
Yeah, I know.
And if there isn't at least one person who is important to you telling you that this means a lot, it's really hard to keep going at it.
It is, yeah, because you definitely get to that day. You know, you might have a great bunch of days, and then you get to a day where you're like, what is the point of this?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Yeah. And then I guess the important thing is getting up the next day and doing it again, but it certainly helps when there's somebody saying, hey, do this properly, get in there and do it again tomorrow. Yeah. And so when did all of this happen? How long ago did you start making these pieces?
These particular pieces, I think I started in 2012, late 2012.
Wow.
I decided to go to college for industrial design here when I moved to Sydney, and I had some time between starting college and I was just not doing anything in that time, and I decided to just indulge my crafty, papery self.
And then, so did you end up going to college?
Yes, of course.
Oh my gosh. So are you graduated now and an industrial designer?
Yeah, I finished that last year.
Oh my goodness. So wait, okay. So but then how on earth do you have time to make these insane things you make?
Because with my industrial design thing as well, I had this thing that I wanted to make things.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make furniture. So as long as I'm making something, I'm fine. I just don't want to sit on the computer and other things. So, with my industrial design thing as well, I've made a few furniture pieces. I've found time to do this as well somehow.
Because it seems from where I'm looking that this paper thing is sort of taking off for you.
Yeah, it is.
So you're starting, you're showing and things like that, right?
I've been showing from the first day. I don't know how it works, but the first time I put my work online, it was on Etsy, because I didn't know that being a professional artist was an option at all. Like, I didn't know this world exists. So I wanted to put my work online somewhere, and I put it up on Etsy, and somebody saw it and they were like, would you like to do an exhibition with us?
Oh, my word.
Yeah, it's been...
Good for you. Like,
yeah.
That's what I wanted to know. I didn't know how, that first step, and so Etsy, there you go. Wow.
Yeah.
And how many shows have you had since, or been in exhibitions and created pieces? Lots, it seems like.
Oh, I haven't counted really, but I think about looking at my resume quickly, I think it's about 20 so far.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So... why are you being an industrial designer?
I'm just I don't know that it, because I like knowing how to make things.
Yeah.
And
well, you just make sure that you have time for this. Don't go get some fancy job and now you won't have time for this.
I couldn't work for anyone else for sure. So I'm going to use all of these skills for myself. I want to start a business eventually. So all okay. of these skills Phew. Are going to come in handy when that happens.
Okay. I just had a picture of you in like a cubicle, not having time to do this. So no. that scared me. Okay, good, good, good. Okay. So let's go in reverse. So you were born in India.
Yeah.
And were you artsy as a kid or were you, or is this like a whole new thing?
No, very much. I was the artsy, rebellious kid because I was like, as far back as I can think of, I was always making things.
And so, and what did your family think of that? Did you have a family that creates stuff or were you just sort of this one weirdo that was making things?
I think I was the one weirdo because everybody else is either a professor or an engineer or like I'm a computer science engineer as well. So everybody in the family is an engineer or an MBA. And it's a really, really like the focus on academics is big in our family. So yeah. for them as well, it was always a hobby that they let me do in summer holidays or I could sort of hide everything from them and do it. Because I think that's why paper works really, really well for me because I never had to bring out all of my supplies to do whatever I wanted to do. Like I could just do stuff with paper and quickly hide it inside my books when they came. So yeah, it worked pretty well.
Oh my gosh. So did you just say you went to school for computer science?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's what my husband went to school for.
Oh wow.
And so what did you think when you were in that? Like, I'm sure you were good at it, but did you care or did you think that would be your career?
Not at all. Like I wanted to go to fashion school. I was really big into art and design and textiles and all of those things. And I almost went to one of the biggest schools for fashion in India. But my parents did not like that idea at all. They said nobody in our family has ever been to any sort of design school. So there's no way you were doing any of those things.
Oh my God.
Engineering school it is. So I went there, but did not like it at all. I still spent 4 years there and got myself a job in a technology company. But as soon as I got there, I showed them all of my graphic design work that I'd been doing in college. And they let me work in their communications department for them.
Ah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I never really worked as an engineer. I got myself out as soon as I could.
First day of work. Hi there. Let me show you something.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you did that, but then you end before Sydney, you were in the States, right?
Yeah.
So well, how did that jump happen?
So I met my husband when I was working for that technology company because he's a consultant. And I met him there and then we got married and he was already in the US by that time. So I had to join him there.
Mm-hmm.
I left my job and I moved there thinking I'd probably go study something really cool now. Like this is my chance.
And where did you guys, where was the first place you were?
In Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And did you study something?
No, because we had to leave pretty quickly.
Okay.
Like, I really wanted to go to SVA, but I missed the deadline for the applications. And that didn't work out. And then we had to move to London for his work again. And then we had to move to Sydney again. But once we got to Sydney, I was pretty sure that no more moving and I am going to college to study something really cool now.
Yeah. Oh, good for you. And so how long have you been in Sydney?
4 years now.
4 years now. Okay. Wow. Yeah. You didn't waste any time. You got there and right into school.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I was tired of all the moving and thinking about what I want to do with my life. So as soon as I got here, I got myself into college.
Well, see, impatience pays off sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
No in more waiting.
You think that has paid off.
That is just so cool. Okay, so I wanted to sort of talk about what was it culture shock to go from India to the U.S. to London to Sydney? Or were you just like up for the adventure? Or what was that whole thing like?
I was always up for the adventure, but what I didn't know was that I was leaving this big support system behind and going to this place where nobody will know me and I will have to start my life all over again. Like, it has new meaning for me now. It doesn't mean that you have to find work for yourself. It means you have to find those people who care enough for you and will always support you no matter what. So yeah, that was the biggest shock for me. But otherwise, the culture, like in India, we're so exposed to Western culture anyway. So it didn't seem like it was a big culture shock in
right,
that sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And so does that, I think I read somewhere on your site maybe about how does that experience influence your work? Like, are the patterns traditional from India, or are they things that you're seeing in Sydney, or are they a combination, or how does that whole experience influence your work?
These patterns have somehow been there always. Like my family is like a Hindu family, but I studied in a Christian school, and right next to our school was this mosque. And I could see glimpses of these patterns in the temples, in the church, in the mosque. And then when I got to Philly, there were these old historic buildings that had these patterns. And then I got to London, and Europe is full of these Arabesque patterns. And when I got here, it was just like, I don't know, maybe they've always left a mark on me. You don't know how the brain works, right? You don't know what's in that brain until you get to the point where you want to write something on a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah.
And geometry felt like everything is so uncertain in life, but if I draw a line here and I draw a line there, I am going to come up with this. There was so much certainty and joy in geometry that I just, I took to it like, I think I needed it.
Yeah.
It's much, the drawing process is as meditative as the weaving process.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So do you plan it all out as a drawing first?
Yeah.
Like quite intricately, or is it just a sketch and you get the general gist, or do you actually plan?
I really plan. I get into all the detail of how I want this to look in the end, because initially when I was making some work, I always wished I'd sort of planned it better. So now I get into the smallest detail of how this is going to be placed on this piece of paper.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so when you do the really, really big ones.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. There's a few photos on your site of you doing these giant ones that do look like carpets. They're so huge.
Yeah.
How long... I mean, I always say this, I'm sure it's different with every piece, but
yeah.
From the planning to the drawing to the actual weaving, like how long does that take you?
A lot of time.
Yeah. Like miss impatient?
Oh. Yeah, the blue one that you see there on my website, the really big blue carpet, took me about 7 months to do because it had so many small pieces to it. It was unbelievable.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but I knew that I was going to do that work for 5 months before that. So I was planning it in my head. So it's like 7 months of continuous work, but I'd been planning it for a while.
Wow. And was that for a specific show?
Yeah, that was for the Paper Art Biennale in Amsterdam at the Coda Museum.
Oh my gosh, did you go?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow. That's
that was
amazing. How did you get your work there? So did you have to assemble it there?
No, so it went from here in pieces. And because I have this engineering background, I have this tendency to get into details on how they can assemble it there. So I sent them detailed instructions of what to do, and I made it really easy for them to do it. So I didn't have to go for the installation bit, but then I went there for the opening.
Was it like, did you get chills? Did it just sort of blow your mind to see it there?
It was unreal. Like I said, that when I'm doing this work, I'm another person. So I just went there, oh my God, who did this? Because I certainly did not do this. Like, I can't write. So,
did your husband go with you?
Yeah, he did.
He must have been so proud.
Yeah, like when we went there, there was this big crowd of people who realized that I was the artist because we were taking some pictures in front of just that work. And somebody told them that, yes, I am the artist. And all of them started clapping for me. Like, there was a big applause and everything. Like, and these were people on tour at the museum, so they didn't come for me, right? But it sent chills down my spine. Like, I almost got teary-eyed because these people don't know me. They don't know anything that I've been through in making that work, but they somehow got it, and they had it in them to applaud for me. Like, I was a nobody, so.
Oh, my goodness. That gave my, I got goosebumps on my arms. That's so
cool. Yeah, it was unreal.
And so you just said, you know, they realized I was the artist. How do you feel about calling yourself an artist?
It's only for other people's convenience so that they can, so they can somehow not be confused when I tell them this is who I am. It's really, really hard to tell them all those things that I am. So it's just, sometimes I just say I'm an artist, and then it's for their convenience. In my heart, I know I'm many other things, and it's just really hard to say I'm one particular thing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, initially I would not say that at all. I would say, hey, I'm Gunjan and I make art. Like, I did not have it in me to say I'm an artist, but I realized I was making their life difficult, not mine easier. So I started telling them I'm an artist, and that's fine for everybody. Like, I can, not make it hard for them.
Well, say you go to a dinner party with a bunch of people you don't know. Would you introduce yourself and they say, oh, what do? Would you say I'm an artist?
Depends on how much I like them. If I really want to get into a conversation with them, I will tell them I'm an artist and that I make art.
Yeah. What if but you don't like them?
Then I probably don't talk at all.
Just turn around. Give them the silent treatment.
Yeah, because so it's a long conversation, because they start asking me, what sort of art do I make? And then it's so hard to explain without showing any pictures.
Right,
and
like even you can't just say oil painting.
Like, and then I don't have a subject like a landscape or a portrait, because those are things that people already have an idea about.
Right.
This work, they don't have an idea about. So I have to really get into that detail of what do I do. And even when they see pictures, it's not really clear what does it really look like in real life. So I avoid it till I really like the person.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. It's just like, oh, too exhausting. Never mind. I can't even tell you what I do.
Yeah.
So you've got your beautiful patterns. You also have some really cool text pieces.
Oh, yeah.
Are those newer than the patterns?
Oh, yes, very much. I guess all artists have this thing, right, that they're doing stuff for their own joy, and then they realize other people are looking at it and they have things to say about this thing. So you start making work that says more than you would say in person.
Right.
So those text-based pieces are very much, I call them my mind reader pieces, because it's really hard to read the text unless you are at a certain distance from the work.
Right.
And then if you can read the text, you don't know what it's made of. So you have to get really, really close to the work and see what it is made of. And
you can't read it. That's really cool.
Yeah, and all you're consumed by is all the detail, and that's what you're thinking about in the moment. And it's really about being in the moment with the work and spending time with it, rather than saying, hey, this is just another image.
Mm-hmm.
Right swipe, left swipe. That doesn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Was that, okay, I have to say two things about that. Well, where should I go first? Even the piece that you sent me, I don't know what the diameter of that circle would be, like.
That's about
7 or 8 inches?
23 centimeters or something.
Okay. Even that, like, it's so, my mom is an artist, and she was just here visiting last weekend, and I was like, mom, you have to come and see this. And she was like, what is that? And, you know, we both just stood there and stared at it, and you can just, it really does pull you in. There's so much to look at. And so I can't even imagine standing in front of one of the big ones. And so, okay, I just needed to say that. Now, the text thing. So having that idea, because that's so brilliant, like the having to back up, but then having to get close. Were you just like lying in bed one morning and had that thought, or how did you come up with that idea?
I think that's got a lot to do with being in a new place completely, because I meet so many people, and every time I show them my work, I get all of those adjectives about it. Oh my God, I love it. Oh my God, I love it. And I felt like I need to do something about this because I'm like, I don't know if I'm tired. I'm really grateful that people say that, but I just wish that the conversation went beyond it. I wish right. I could show it to them beyond the pictures and they could see it in real life. So I thought there was this big work that said, love it, right? So if people could come really close to it and look at the detail, but still not understand what's happening. And when they stepped back and they read love it, it would be like, oh my God, that's what I was thinking when I was there in front of the work when I realized it was paper. So that was the only thing that I had. And all, like, these are things that people are thinking about in the digital space these days a lot. Like, there's this art movement, especially in Sydney, I don't know about anywhere else though, where people use a lot of lights and sound installations, and they want to make your head go round and round. They just want your head to spin when people look at the artwork. But I wanted to do that with something that's not in the digital space, and that's how the idea came about. What if people could feel like, oh my God, that's what I was just thinking, I love it. So,
well, I think you did that. And so when you're working and being so meticulous and becoming another person, are you sort of, because I feel like that when I cut images for collage, I can just get into the zone and all of a sudden 5 hours has passed. I'm like, whoa, where did the day go? But I find that when I'm doing that, I think about all sorts of stuff, which is generally around my art. Like, I don't really think about my to-do list or, you know, life. I just think about what I'm making. And so do you, because you've got to be down, you're on the floor, right?
No, I'm on a table.
You're on a table.
That's why, those pieces are like smaller pieces that are put together to make that one large work. It's really hard to be anywhere else but a table for this work.
Okay. So when you're sitting there and you're working away, do you get lots of ideas then, or are you just sort of focused on what you're making at that moment?
I'm mostly listening to podcasts when I'm doing this. Sometimes I'm also thinking about all the other work that I want to make, and my coolest ideas come when I'm in the middle of a work that's going to take forever to finish.
Yeah.
So by the time I'm finished with it, I've lost that really cool idea as well. Yeah.
And then when you listen to, sometimes I'll have like a movie on in the background. Do you, when you look at a piece that's done, does it remind you of whatever you were listening to or what, or, you know, that you had on in the background?
Not at all. Like, no. I'm a completely different person when this is over. Like, I just look at it from a third person's eye. Like, it's so hard for me to look at them and say I made them. It's just not me when they're finished.
It's so funny. It's like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah, it is. It is very much an out-of-body experience. Like, I need to be someone else to sit here all day and make this. And then when it's done, I'm my brash self who's out there looking at other people's work and saying, hey, this is cool. I love it.
Have you ever heard that the TED Talk that Elizabeth Gilbert gave about the muse?
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite TED Talk ever.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And I think that sounds like exactly, in a way, what happens to you. You're just, your muse shows up and takes over.
Yeah,
and you can
talk a lot about the genius as well, right? And I'm scared about talking about the genius. Hey, I'm not the genius. No.
Well, it's kind of nice, right? That's why I love that TED Talk. It was like, oh, great. Like, you don't have to have, there's no conceit that comes with it. There's no pressure on you. It's like, you know, the genius just shows up and does his thing, and that's
absolutely
that.
I think that has helped me look at this work, like, separate myself from this work as well. Like, to know that this is not you, but then have words to describe this feeling is really, really precious. And I think that talk did it for me.
Yeah.
That I can now proudly say, this is not me. And hey, if you need proof, look, watch this TED Talk.
That's really funny. I wonder how many other artists feel like that, because I know a lot of people talk about, you know, being in the zone, or they call it, like, you know, the golden hour. They have all these different, you know, the magic, whatever. Everybody's got a name for it, and it's just the most, like, as a creative person, it's just the best place to be, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where you go.
I think so.
Yeah. Do you ever teach workshops?
No, never. It's just, I feel like it's maybe you can teach things that a lot of people know. Like, for example, you could teach regular weaving because that's something that it's a skill that a lot of people can use. But with this work, it's so much meditation, and it's also not a established skill to learn. So like a lot of people ask me to do workshops, but I just feel like it's meditation and it's a mind space as well. It's not just knowing what to do with your hands. It's about going into that mental space as well. So
Well, and you invented it. You don't really want to give all your secrets away.
no, I'm so happy to give away all the secrets because this helped me so much. And like I remember feeling that I'm alone after I left my country. And this work helped me tie myself to wherever I was. Now it does not matter wherever I go in the world. I just have this really precious thing. And I'm very, very happy to share it with the world. Like people write to me like from all over the world, and sometimes I don't understand their language. So I go on Google Translate, I translate what they're asking me, and then I translate my answers in their language and I send it to them because I know this can really help. So I'm really happy for people to come watch me work and maybe try it themselves too. But I think it's not really about what you do with your hands.
Right. Well, and I think what's so inspiring about your story is the fact that, you did kind of make up this thing for yourself. It's so cool. Like, well, I mean,
Because I'm
obviously,
so impatient to learn anything else.
no, I don't know, but it's just so good. Like, I mean, industrial design is clearly the right place for you because that's how industrial designers think. How can I make a chair that's not like every other chair? And, how can I work with paper that's not like every other piece of paper? It's so inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Do you, I guess after, now that you sort of developed this technique, do you have favorite papers that you work with, or do you try different textures, or do you just have your go-to now?
I'm mostly limited by the weight of the paper, so it can't be really thick, and 160 GSM is what works best for this work. Anything that's lighter or heavier just does not stay, doesn't have enough memory to stay curled for longer than I
Right.
need
And
it
so I
to
guess
be.
that was a lot of trial and error to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I really have to touch and feel the paper to know where its grain is going so that I know it won't open up as quickly as other people's do.
Wow,
So,
isn't that cool? Like, what a weird skill that you now have that you can touch paper and probably immediately know if it'll work or not.
not immediately. I do have to do my trial and error even now, but I have a better idea than I did 4 years ago.
So do you, I guess you, can you order it online or do you actually go to a place to buy it?
I can order it online, but I just hate to do that because I really like to touch and feel the paper before I buy it.
Yeah, and paper shops are the best.
I know, and Sydney doesn't have so many of them. So when I go to Europe, it's just amazing. Like, I have to carry boxes for my papers as well.
There was this place in I lived in Toronto for years, and there was a place called the Japanese Paper Place, and it
Wow.
was just drawers and drawers, and they would hang it over wire, and there was just Japanese paper as far as the eye could see, and it was not very far from the ad agency where I was working, so sometimes I
Wow.
just go over there at lunch and just
Yeah.
like wander around, and oh my gosh, I loved it so
Amazing.
much. Yeah, you
Yeah.
would, I
See, you
mean.
don't need to be a paper artist to love paper to that much that you're spending your lunch breaks at a paper shop.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, I just like the colors, right? I'll just stand in front of, even at an
Yeah.
art store, and just, even if I'm not even buying, I always buy white paper, but I
Yeah.
just look at it and it's like, ooh, colors. Okay,
Imagine.
that's actually leading me to the speed round. I'm gonna go right to the speed
Oh,
round. Are you ready for the speed round?
I don't think, but we'll try.
Okay. Okay, so this might have to be an at-the-moment question because I'm sure it changes all the time. Right
Right.
now, what is your favorite go-to color for paper?
Always blue, 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 blue.
Any kind of blue?
Yep.
Okay. Do you wear a lot of blue?
I think I do.
You should look through
I
your
have it in my
closet.
studio, so I'm never looking at what I'm wearing, right? So but I think I do have a lot of blue.
You
Yeah.
probably do.
Yeah.
Okay. So Australia for 4 years. Do you or do you not eat Vegemite?
No, I haven't tried it yet. I was listening to the podcast with Rachel Castle. I was like, oh my God, is this question going to come to me? Should I try Vegemite before the podcast? But I was like, no, I cannot do this. No.
Okay, well, if you do, I love Vegemite. I lived in Sydney for 1 month, but I dated an Australian for quite a few years. And the key is lots of butter. The butter has to melt on the toast first. You need an obscene amount of butter. Once it's all melty, it's just a scrape of Vegemite. If you put it on like peanut butter or something, you will hate Vegemite for the rest of your life. It's just a little scrape.
A lot of people have told me that trick, but I just fail to understand. There are so many other tasty things to eat in this world. Why would anyone bother with Vegemite? I don't get it. Like, it's not kale, right? It's not health food of the moment. So why?
You better be quick. They might kick you out if they hear this. They'll revoke all visas. You'll be out.
All these are so nice. They're not going to do that. They'd probably join me.
What about Tim Tams?
Oh, Tim Tams are nice, but yeah, not my favorite thing to eat.
Really?
Yeah, I'm an Indian person. I have like this huge flavor profile in my taste buds, right? So,
what's your favorite thing to eat?
Anything dairy at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ice cream?
Ice cream, cheese, yogurt, milk. You make it with milk and I'll eat it.
Okay. So funny. I love Indian food, actually. And I just discovered a new, apparently there's an amazing place in the next town over. And everybody's saying, you haven't eaten there? So I'm getting it tomorrow. And I'm so excited.
Awesome.
Okay. So here's another Australia question. What's your favorite spot in Australia? Have you traveled around very much?
I have, and I have to say there is this little town in the bush called, not a little town, it's like a small city, it's called Broken Hill, and it is so, so special. Everybody has to go there. It is, they have public art installations as well in the bush, and some amazing restaurants, a really cool milk bar. It's a place from another world, and it is so, so beautiful. The sunsets there are the best ever, so wow. I think anybody who's ever in Australia has to go to Broken Hill.
How far from Sydney is it?
It's a 12-hour drive.
Oh, just a quick little 12-hour drive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm Canadian. I get it. Everything here is a quick 12-hour drive, too, so I get that. Oh, that sounds beautiful. I didn't go there. I'll put it on my list if I go back.
And another place, I think, is Mungo Mungo National Park. So, so beautiful.
Which way is that?
That's also really close to Broken Hill, but it's like being on the moon. You're not on Earth when you're there.
Wow, so cool.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I asked because I didn't know of either of those places.
My two favorite places in Australia, and I'd go back anytime.
Okay, good to know. Okay, last one. What is your dream venue to have your work shown? Where would you want one of your pieces to be?
I already have an answer, believe it or not. I think Silicon Valley would be great because I think there's so much digital happening and I feel like we've forgotten that there are things beyond digital as well. And I would love for people to stop and look at something that's not digital for a while.
Oh, that's a really good answer. Have you seen the new Facebook building?
I haven't, no.
They did a really good job of bringing in a whole bunch of artists. Like, there's installations all throughout the whole building.
Wow.
And I didn't know it was happening. And they reached out to me because I think I've written about 4 or 5 of the people that they had in there. And so I obviously just had like a very similar taste to them, right? And so there was talk of going down there. So, you know, I'd still love to do that. But I should send them an email and tell them about you.
Aww.
How cool would that be?
I know, like, I can't believe the kind of things that happen in this world, but yeah.
Oh, I know. Me either. I mean, I'm just sitting in my little house and then, you know, crazy emails come through or beautiful art gets shipped to your front door. And I know, I pinch myself all
the
time.
You're really kind. No, you're really kind.
That was all my questions.
Awesome. I can't believe
Wasn't that easy?
That was really easy. And I think the pressure was from thinking about all the people that will be listening to this. But then I realized I can't give up this chance to talk to Danielle.
No.
So I have to say yes. She's not going to ask me again and again, hey, please come on the podcast. So I have to say yes the first time.
Although you'd be surprised. I do beg a lot of people. So darn, I guess I should have hit record for all of that.
Yeah, I trust you.
And by you trust me, you mean you don't trust me at all?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
When it comes to the podcast, no.
I know. It was so good the first few times I did that because no one suspected a thing.
Yeah.
Now everybody knows my tricks. So I'm going to have to come up with some new material.
Yes. Like maybe do a preliminary call or something so that...
Yeah. Oh, good idea. Why don't we just touch base first and then we'll schedule it for another time?
Yeah.
Ooh,
that'd be awesome.
I like that. I like that. Well, yeah. I hope you weren't nervous because that was so cool, so interesting. And I'm so, you know, very often I say to people, oh, I wish I could see your work in person. And I never want people to feel like they have to send me things. People do not have to send me things. I always feel slightly guilty when things arrive, but at the same time, I'm not sending it back. Like at the same time, my gosh, it's just so different to see your work online. It's interesting actually what you say about the digital thing, because seeing your work online is still spectacular, but nothing like seeing it in person.
A lot of people have said that to me, and I take that as a big, big compliment. Like that's my goal with this whole thing, that you have to experience this in real life. Like you can't experience this in the digital world.
No, you can't. And so Silicon Valley was literally the perfect answer. Well, let's see what we can do about that then, shall we?
Yes, that'll be awesome.
Okay.
And I also really want to tell you that you shouldn't feel guilty about people sending you work, because you send your work to their mailboxes every day pretty much. And like so many people have benefited from it. Like I was working alone and your blog was one of the few places that I could go to sort of know that there are more people out there doing this thing and I'm not alone in this at least. And when you started the podcast, it just got better. Like it couldn't have been better than that, because now these people were saying to me that you're not alone, and that meant so much. So thank you so much for all of that.
Oh,
like you sent me your work every day and I just sent it to you once, and yeah, it's just a little thank you for the really big work that you've sent me and will continue to send me now.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. And you know, the thing is, people think I'm so, you know, that I've done this great thing, but it's like I've done it all completely for myself. I started the blog because I felt alone. And then the podcast was, you know, well, Creative Block, the book was the next step in feeling less alone. And
yeah,
that worked wonders. And then the podcast was like even more. And I love it. Like I'm addicted to hearing all of your stories because, you know, I make art too. And hearing
yeah.
you guys... I mean, I always get chills. I always, you know, get out from under my little pillow fort and just want to run right into my studio and make stuff after talking to you guys, because then I don't feel alone either. So it's really totally selfish and completely for me. So, and
the
I get
the
art.
The one that we do for ourselves, not for anybody else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that
thank
awesome.
You. Thank you so much. And
Thank you.
There has been a tiny bit of talk about maybe coming to Australia when the new book comes out. So probably not till next spring, but if I, well, my spring, your fall.
Yeah.
but if I do, I'm going to come visit you because I want to see the big ones.
No,
person.
We have to meet. Yes.
Yeah.
Let me know whenever you're planning to be here and I'll make sure this happens.
Okay. Deal.
Great.
Well, thank
Great.
You so much. And I really will
thank
hang up.
You.
I won't pretend that I did. I really will hang up. And I will talk to you soon.
Perfect. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Silicon Valley, make the call. Hurry though, because someone is going to scoop up this gorgeous analog work. Yep, I think she was bang on. Silicon Valley would be an amazing place for her work to hang. To get a look at the work that Gunjan and I were talking about, pop over to my site, thejealouscurator.com. It's all just stunning, but yes, seeing it in person is a totally different experience. And speaking of seeing things in person, if I do end up in Sydney next year, I am totally going to get this dairy-loving lady to take me out for ice cream. She was not kidding. She really does love dairy. Note the yummy ice cream photos in the post, all of which I found on her Instagram feed. They're from all over the world. Ice creams from around the world. Okay, and with that, I will say thank you so much to Gunjan for doing this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode. And of course, big thanks to you for listening. If you feel like subscribing, rating, or reviewing Art for Your Ear on iTunes, well, I wouldn't stop you. How's that for a sales pitch? Okay, enough of that. I'm not very good at that. And yes, you guessed it. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.